Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, and I am delighted to welcome somebody I brag as a friend, Professor Christine Keneally, the world-renowned author, writer, and authority on Ireland's Great Hunger, a professor of history at and Irish Studies at Quinnipiac University. And you're very welcome there, Professor Christine. How are you?
I'm good, and thank you for inviting me. Okay. It's great to speak to you.
Now, I do want to ask you about the Grey Nuns and the exhibition, of course, obviously, which you are taking to Ireland for September 11th. But tell us a bit about the Grey Nuns. Who are they?
So the Grey Nuns are a religious order that was founded in Montreal in the mid-18th century. And they were founded by a woman whose husband had died. He was a bit of a ne'er-do-well. He was a bootlegger. He sold alcohol illegally. And when he died, she decided to found a small religious order that was devoted to poor people, and especially people who had problems with the drink. So she founded it, and the people who joined her, they grew, and they took a very distinctive type of habit, which is sort of grey. To our eyes, it's more caramel, but it was described as being grey, and hence their name, Les Soirs Gris, because they were, in fact, French-speaking. It was Montreal, so they were French-speaking. But in French, that little term, Les Soirs Gris, actually also means the drunken sisters. So it was sort of a play on the fact her husband was a bootlegger, and here they were wearing this very distinctive uniform habit. And also they wore a very distinctive type of hat, which was a widow's peak, and so you can identify them. And they wore that habit from the mid-18th century until the 1960s. And when we opened our exhibit, we were lucky enough to be able to borrow an actual habit, and we borrowed a mannequin, and we dressed the mannequin in the nun's habit. It's actually very beautiful, but it's also very practical, because from the outset, these nuns wanted to work with the poor, the sick, and they had sleeves that detached so that they could wash them. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very clever uniform.
Now, they were the Sisters of Charity. And
yeah.
I am wondering, would they have been the same order, the Sisters of Charity, that were and maybe still are very prominent in Ireland when throughout the villages and the parish, collecting for the poor? Is that the same order?
They're a different order.
And
they're different because they were founded, as I said, in Canada through the French church, because Montreal at that stage was more French than Irish. But they did extend, and within a few decades, they had orders everywhere else, as far down as Pennsylvania. Even today, there is an order of the Grey Nuns in Pennsylvania. But as you know, their numbers are shrinking.
Mm-hmm. Now they're... I was going to say the chicken and the egg, but that's not very complimentary to the Grey Sisters. But they would have already been established before the Great Hunger, before the Irish Famine.
Yes. Oh, they were there 100 years. They were founded around 1750.
Okay.
So by the time the Great Hunger and the massive influx of Irish people, they were very well established. But most of their job, as I said, was with the poor.
Yes. Now let me ask you, though, about the role that the Grey Nuns played in the Great Hunger and the famine ships.
Yes.
And I'd like to preface that by asking you, we know because of Gros Eel and the mass graves of Irish immigrants that wound up in Gros Eel, were those who emigrated at the time, were they on their way to other places, for instance, New York or other ports, and by the time they got to Montreal, many of them were stricken with fever. Many of them had somehow survived the Great Hunger in Ireland, but only made it as far as Canada, Montreal, only to die from fever anyway.
Your last statement is absolutely true. So people who felt they were fleeing from famine and from death, in fact, a large number of them perished either on the ships, we remember them as coffin ships,
yes,
or indeed when they landed. And even those who survived, we know their average lifespan was only 6 years. So although emigration was an escape, it was a very difficult choice, and there was no guarantee of survival because of it. If I could just go back to the first part of your question. In 1847, because so many Irish people were sailing to North America, many ports in the United States actually imposed new taxation. So they prevented Irish ships effectively from landing in places like Boston, New York. So in 1847, probably the worst year of the Great Hunger, more ships went to Canada than went to the USA. And that's why there was so much pressure on places like Grosse Isle and Montreal in that particular year.
Now,
in 1848, many of those taxes were removed, and so again, the distribution of emigrants changed. But 1847, in some ways, is an aberration. But that's why there was so much pressure on Canada.
Was it coincidental that places like New York and Boston imposed the tax? Was that just a coincidence, or does history record that they were indeed more than aware that a lot of the immigrants coming on the coffin ships, they weren't among the most desirable anyway?
It was absolutely done in full knowledge of that. And also, what people argued, and people in places like Glasgow, London, Liverpool were arguing, is we're raising money to send charity to Ireland, yet here we are taking in the poor as the dregs of our society. Why are we paying for Ireland's poverty? It's not our responsibility. So, people felt, aggrieved. And also, as you say, the Irish who came, they were unwitting carriers of so much disease, especially fever. So very quickly they became a real danger to the native population.
Did many of those, my guest friends is Dr. Christine Keneally, who indeed is the founding director of Ireland's Great Hunger Institute at Quinnipiac University. Let me ask you about those who were fleeing poverty, hunger, the famine in Ireland. Did some of those actually pick up fever and unrelated diseases on these coffin ships?
They did, and just the same as they would pick them up in the workhouses, in the queues for the soup kitchens, because when people were congregated, the lice, the way in which these diseases were mostly transmitted, it became a breeding ground. And if you think people who traveled to North America, they were on a ship, confined often below deck for 4 to 5 weeks. They were very insanitary conditions. They brought their own food. There was relatively little water. And how could they wash their clothes? So it's almost incredible that people survived that journey rather than people died. It's just terrible. And unregulated, that was the awful thing about so much famine emigration. There were so few regulations that governed it.
We, and particularly in your own writings, in your own authoritative books on the Great Hunger, where we learned of compassionate landlords, British landlords in Ireland, some of them were compassionate others as absentee landlords were simply riddled with the greed that was afforded because of the great hunger in Ireland. Let me ask you though about the coffin ships. Was that with no regulations, no official regulations anyway? Were some of those ships, for instance, were they better than others, or were they all very primitive with the conditions that might be more, akin to cattle boats?
Yeah, and that's really interesting because many people went to Liverpool first because they knew from Liverpool they could get the cheapest passage to North America. But many of the ships that came to Liverpool had brought timber or grain from North America, so they weren't really suited to carrying people. So they weren't passenger ships in the way we might think of them.
Yes.
But some of the recent research shows that if ships had a medical officer on board, people were more likely to survive. And we know that people who sailed from the port of Limerick had a good chance of surviving because most of the ships that sailed from there actually insisted on a medical officer. And I know you know the Jeannie Johnson that visited New York a few years ago. The ship was recreated in County Kerry. It's now on the docks in Dublin. And they boasted that nobody died during their journeys because of the excellent medical superintendent. So the story really does vary. But what it shows is that people didn't have to die. If there had been more regulations, more intervention, more people would have survived.
Right. Now, you mentioned the Jeannie Johnson there. That ship would have been the exception rather than the rule, though. There weren't many.
Unfortunately, it was, and that's why we know about it. Mm-hmm. It really does stand out for those reasons.
Now, coming back to the exhibition, and again, first of all, tell us about the creation of the exhibition.
So the exhibition was opened at Quinnipiac in March 2015, and it remained in place for a year. And it was located in Quinnipiac University in one of the libraries, the Lender Room. You're familiar with it.
Yes, indeed.
And its origins really lie with a discussion between myself and a fellow historian, Dr. Jason King.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason is from Canada, and he speaks French. And he was aware of the story of the Grey Nuns and the fact that they'd left all their records behind, but because they were in French, nobody had really used them. And he'd been involved in a project with the University of Limerick to transcribe them, digitize them, and make them available language version.
Yes. But now, wasn't he a postdoctoral fellow at at Galway University?
He was. He gets around. He was. Yeah, he was.
Okay, so I had him as a guest on the program, that's why I just didn't remember.
Oh, you did? Yes. Okay, so I'll be with him next week. I'll remind him of that. So Jason and I have been friends, colleagues, fellow historians for a long time, and we just thought this story was so wonderful that we should try and tell it in a different way, and we felt an exhibition. But one of the things that makes it unique as well is that the story of the Grey Nuns, not only do their written records survive, they've actually been captured in the most beautiful visual image called Le Typhus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an image that was painted in 1848, and it was commissioned by the Bishop of Montreal, who caught Irish fever, as they call it, and survived it. And he commissioned a local painter to paint a scene depicting the suffering of the Irish. And at the forefront of that scene is the wonderful Grey Nuns. And that beautiful image is now on the ceiling of a church in Montreal, and we were given permission to reproduce it. So it's one of the very earliest contemporary representations of the Great Hunger. And so it's very, very powerful.
Now, your newest exhibit, this Saving the Famine, Irish, the Grey Nuns, and the Great Hunger, this will be part of the National Famine Commemoration in Dublin on September 11th. Again, is that a coincidental date? Is there
In Ireland, there is a National Famine Commemoration every year within Ireland, and every year it rotates between the provinces. This mm-hmm. year it's in Leinster, and they've chosen Dublin and Glasnevin Cemetery. And one of the reasons they've chosen Glasnevin Cemetery is because there is a mass famine grave that most people don't know about and doesn't really, it has no markers on it. And so this year it's coming to Glasnevin to, again, help tell that story.
What is the mass famine grave in Glasnevin?
There are mass famine graves all over. We know them in Skibbereen. Literally a pit where people who died in Dublin during the Great Hunger were put. It was not marked, and we don't know their names. We know nothing about them.
It's incredible. What's not incredible, and as a matter of fact, we might expect that the President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, and indeed Heather Humphreys, Minister for Arts and Heritage there, that they will be very much a part of the proceedings at Glasnevin Cemetery. Very keen interest by Michael D. Higgins, who indeed, as President of Ireland, has indeed no stranger to the history of the Great Hunger, and indeed was a noted lecturer on the Great Hunger in Galway. But it is significant that he is going to be there, as well. What's going to happen at Glasnevin? Is there a program there?
I've only just got my program today. I will be there. I'm going over next week. Our Grey Nun exhibition is going to be installed next week, and so it will be there in time for people who are coming on the 11th of September. Glasnevin has a beautiful museum. You may have seen it.
Yes,
it's a beautiful space now.
Yeah.
So that's our exhibition will be there until December. So it's not just going to be there for the day. It's going to be there for almost 4 months. And on the day, the President, usually I've been to a few commemorations. For me, it's a very important date and day to be part of. He will make a dedication. And usually the theme relates to the place. So last year, the commemoration was for the first time ever in Northern Ireland, in Newry. I was there 2 years ago. It was in Stoketown. Before that, it was in Kilrush. And they very much attempt to have a local theme. So I'm sure President Higgins will address that. As you know, he is such a great scholar, such a great speaker.
For those who don't already know, and if you've been listening to this program for any considerable length of time, you would know, indeed, friends, about Ireland's Great Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac University, and then Ireland's Great Hunger Institute, and you as the founding director. Tell us a little bit about the programs that you have developed and that are ongoing at Quinnipiac, Great Hunger, Ireland's Great Hunger Institute.
So the institute is different from the museum.
Yes.
In that I'm based on campus, and I'm very much embedded into the academic life of the Quinnipiac University. So I am a full professor in history, and I do teach. I'm currently teaching two courses. We have an Irish Studies minor, so I'm currently teaching exciting development is this semester I'm teaching a course on the history and culture of Belfast. Mm-hmm. And in November, I'll be taking my students to Belfast for a week. And there are 100 people going from Quinnipiac, which Belfast in November is incredible. And one of the reasons we're going is our ice hockey team is playing in Belfast.
Yes.
But we've built a whole program around it. So we have students coming, undergraduates, postgraduates, family and friends, the ice hockey players, a film crew, and we're going to do so many great things. We're going to Stormont. We're being welcomed there. We're going to see the murals, the Peace Walls. We're going to Derry for one day, Giant's Causeway. So I think it's going to be just a fantastic trip. So that's one thing I'm involved in, the teaching and taking our students to Ireland. The other thing that the Institute is very involved in is exhibitions. So our first exhibition was about Lady Sligo of Westport House. Our second exhibition was The Grey Nuns, which is now on its way to Ireland. And our current exhibition was on 1916. And we were delighted we were able to bring an original proclamation over from Ireland. And we also have a half proclamation on display because the proclamation was printed in two halves. So we think this is the first time anybody has displayed a full proclamation and a half proclamation.
Okay, now the 1916 exhibition, how long is that going
that
to
be? That will close on the 7th of October, and some of it is then going up to Boston College, and some of the exhibition is going to the Whaling Museum in New Bedford. So it's great to see our exhibitions have an afterlife. We are then planning our next really major exhibition is going to be about Frederick Douglass, who visited Ireland in 1845 and 1846.
Christine, first of all, Dr. Christine Keneally, we want to wish you a lot of luck on this first leg of the trip to Glasnevin and Glasnevin Cemetery and the exhibition which will be ongoing until December. Best way to get in touch with you and Ireland's Great Hunger Institute at Quinnipiac. What's the best way?
I can never remember website addresses, but if you just put in Ireland's Great Hunger Institute, we have a Facebook page, we have a web page, and it's very easy to get to me. Very easy.
I thank you, and again, Dr. Professor Christine Keneally, it's always a pleasure indeed to have you. Dr. Christine Keneally, the founding director of Ireland's Great Hunger Institute at Quinnipiac University. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you.
And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.